Good afternoon. Welcome to the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host. Great to be with you here on March the 8th. Hope you're having a great day. We'll be taking your calls a little bit later in the show. The phone is 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. And joining me in the studio today in just a few minutes is Chris Young of Good Jobs Great Houston, which is a group that has come together composed of different unions, some interfaith groups, and basically this group is focused on reform of corporate tax code and focus on corporate taxes. And that's what we're going to be talking about today and where that issue stands. Before we get to Chris, just want to let you know that you can find me on newcapitalshow.com and on Facebook at leogold.newcapitalshow. You go to facebook.com and then my URL is leogold.newcapitalshow, and my Twitter feed is newcapitalshow. And so you can send me messages, friend me, do all those different things that people do now on social networks. So let's go ahead and let's get right to Chris. Chris, great to have you here today. First of all, if you would just tell us a little bit about what your group is doing and how it came about.
Hi, thank you very much for having
me. Great to have you.
Hi, I'm Chris. I'm from the Texas Organizing Project. We're a community group that's based here in Houston. We're part of a coalition along with a bunch of faith-based groups, labor unions, and community groups from all over Harris County that have come together to form a coalition called Good Jobs, Great Houston. And what we're really focusing on with this coalition is what is at the heart of the problems that we're facing in the economy, and one that we've really identified.
Boy, I hope somebody can get at that, huh? You guys can do it. More power to you.
And it's really obvious when you look at the numbers. I mean, that we all know that there's racking up deficits, but when you really look at where the tax base is in this country, the people that aren't paying their fair share are these corporations, and there's quite a few of them that are getting away, not only with not paying anything, but in often cases getting money back.
But let me ask you this. I hate to start off in a contrarian mode, but my kids had a birthday party this past weekend. But their birthdays are one day apart. And we had a party for them at our house for my son on Saturday, and we had a clown. And the clown said, this is what the fee is going to be. It's going to be X, and I want to get paid in cash. Now, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I know what it means when somebody says, I want to get paid in cash. And I've gotten that request all the time from people just in all different walks of life. So my question to you is simply, you know, don't we see the avoidance of taxes, the evasion of taxes, as something that's really rampant in all walks of society?
Definitely. And I think the problem is just the amount of it. I think I would be for everybody paying their fair share of taxes. And that comes from the average Joe on the street to the corporations that are based all over this country, and a lot of them based here in Houston. I think the enormity of it when a corporation that brings in billions and billions of dollars in profit avoids their taxes is a little bit different than the average individual. When we look at the breakdown of who controls the wealth in this country, it's very obvious that the people, the average Joe, the guy that's working as the clown, isn't the person taking the money out.
So what you would say is, well, that's tax evasion. People who are getting paid under the table, basically, that's the phrase, getting paid under the table in cash. But you would say that those people, in a sense, have to, because they're struggling. Is that right?
Not necessarily at all. I mean, yeah, I would say it's kind of like a lost leader. I mean, when we're looking at if you were missing $1,000 out of your account and you saw a mischarge for $10 and something that was a mischarge for $990, are you going to worry about the $10 or the $990 first? And that's really where we are. The fact is, everybody should be paying their fair share of taxes, and that's what working people do. I think most people out there do pay their fair share of taxes, and they look at it and they feel that pain. This year it'll be April 17th, but they feel that pain. The fact is, these corporations are taking billions and billions of dollars out of our economy, keeping them overseas to not pay those taxes.
Okay, so let's talk about who, when you talk about these corporations, it's not all corporations.
No, definitely not.
so give us an understanding of the magnitude of the number of companies that are involved in what you think is really not paying their fair share.
Yeah, I mean, and overall, I mean, when we look at, I mean, there's hundreds and thousands, if not millions, of companies inside the United States. And I don't have the number on all of them, but I do have some very good numbers on some of the biggest ones.
Probably not that many large companies. Yeah. Probably we're talking about thousands of large companies.
Exactly. I mean, but when we're talking about these companies, I mean, there was a great report that was done by the Citizens for Tax Justice that focused on some of these bigger companies. General Electric, FedEx, Verizon, CenterPoint Energy, and El Paso, to name two from just here in the Houston area.
Those two are in Houston.
These major corporations, I think the ones that we all know about. And the fact is, what we looked at when we looked at these, and they looked at it, and we saw their report, was that these companies decided to spend millions more, if not totally spend all their money on lobbying and not paying any taxes. And in often cases, because of the lobbying they were able to do, they were qualified in changing and forcing in tax loopholes, actually able to get money back out of our tax base. And with rising deficits and cutting services, that's just ridiculous that we should be subsidizing General Electric.
Now, General Electric was the subject of a very lengthy article, as I recall. I just saw it because it was on the front page of the New York Times, I want to say 6 months ago or something like this. Did you read that article? It was a long article about General Electric, and it was a focus on their ability to avoid taxes. And it discussed the fact that they have maybe 1,000 tax accounting professionals. I think that was the number. Very large number. Very large department. But that they're not breaking the law. They have simply fine account tax accounting minds in this department that they have put to work to figure out every which way that they can to avoid paying taxes. And yet it's all within the law. Did you see that article?
I'm not sure of exactly which one you're talking about, but that's exactly right. These companies are not breaking the law, mm-hmm. and that's the biggest problem. And when we talk about it, it's not just those accountants. It's the $84 million that GE spent lobbying for these tax loopholes. That's what really set up this fear. That's the reason they can employ those accountants to find those tax loopholes, is they're spending their millions and millions of dollars instead of paying their fair share to lobby folks to try to get those tax loopholes put in.
In the federal tax code.
In the federal tax code. And this is, when I'm talking specifically about these numbers, I'm talking about federal taxes. There are, just like, and I think that those numbers are often thrown around about how many individuals don't pay federal taxes or anything, but they pay state and local taxes. So we're talking specifically about federal taxes right here.
Okay.
And people not paying them.
So Chris, maybe give us some examples of the legislation that has been passed and has been lobbied for that has resulted in a reduction in federal income taxes at the corporate level.
Well, I think a lot of it is just, I mean, and to get into specific legislation is hard, but just the ability to put money into offshore tax shelters, mm-hmm. that basically you're able to keep your profits off the coast and not report them to the federal government. And they're actually, the reason we were able to find out these numbers of how much they had in shelters, they actually do have to report it. They just don't have to pay any taxes on it. And so these are over years and years and years, these loopholes have been added. And I think that's where we really get into the problems when you talk about tax reform. Every loophole that's ever been added can never be changed, because a lot of people are fighting against, oh, that'll be a tax increase. We can never have a tax increase. Well, that loophole never should have been there in the first place. Mm-hmm. And that's the cycle we've gotten in. Is that every time they're able, with those, in GE's case, $84 million, and El Paso's case, almost $3 million of lobbying, they're able to add these tax loopholes, and they never disappear across the books. So those tax accountants that they're able to hire, the thousands of them, are able to find every loophole, which basically makes you and me, taxpayers of the United States, write GE a check.
Yeah. I'm a professional financial advisor, and of course I you know, I mean, what... I observe, and frankly, one of my duties is to make sure that my clients don't pay taxes that they don't have to pay. When you work with people with lots and lots of money, I have some clients who are just people, regular people, and then I have some clients who have lots and lots of money. When you have people with lots and lots of money, there are all kinds of mechanisms that can be used to avoid taxes, especially things like estate taxes, which are taxes that are assessed when money passes from one generation to the next. And so it seems that if you have money and you have power in this country, you have the ability essentially to almost say this is what I'm going to be paying in taxes, and that's the way it is.
And that's exactly what it is. And it's even getting worse now with the Citizens United decision allowing unlimited corporate donations into the election cycle.
Uh-huh.
We can just see that problem. If it's already this bad, how bad is it going to get when people have that?
So give us some numbers. And by the way, if you're just joining us, this is the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, and Chris Young is joining me. He is with Good Jobs Great Houston, which is a nonprofit coalition of I looked at your website last night, and go ahead and tell us some of the union partners
it's made up of teachers, janitors, service workers, from the labor side, some pastoral groups, and like I said, my group, Texas Organizing Project, which is the largest community group in Harris County. Mm-hmm. Just basically the working class of America, or of Texas and Harris County, is who we've put together of this coalition, and we're definitely interested in anybody else that would be willing to work with us and join the coalition. And if people are and they want to get involved, they can definitely call our office at 713-236-8245, because we're always looking to expand this, and there's thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, and in Harris County millions of people that should be out in the streets and angry about this stuff.
Okay, so go ahead and give us some figures. Basically, tell us, I think you've got a chart that you're looking at that tells what profits have been for companies over the last X number of years, and then what are the taxes that they've paid over that same period? So go ahead and give us a flavor.
GE, like we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, well, go slow and just kind of give us some. I like to give numbers on my show, go ahead and give us some numbers. Go ahead and give us General Electric.
GE is probably the poster child of this. I mean,
and by the way, the CEO, Jeff Immelt of GE, is actually, I think, speaking in Houston today.
He will be in town
at
today.
The Cambridge Energy Research Conference.
Yeah.
This is the big oil and gas confab that meets annually in Houston. It's basically the Woodstock of the energy business. And Jeff Immelt is speaking there today. GE has a very large presence in the power business, in making turbines, nuclear stuff for nuclear plants, natural gas turbines for gas powered plants and things like that. So go ahead and tell us what is GE's profit over the last few years and their tax.
They've made $10.5 billion over the last 3 years.
And they had a tough 2008, right? They had a huge finance arm. At that time, roughly half of the company was a financial business. They had a tough 2008, then they've recovered over the last few years. So they made $10.5 billion over the last 3 years, and they paid how much in taxes?
They actually received a check from the federal government for $4.7 billion.
Okay, so they got a... So they made $10 billion in profits, and they got a check back for $4 billion. Now, I'm assuming that if Jeff Immelt was sitting here today, I know he's busy, otherwise he would be here, but if Jeff Immelt was sitting here, he'd say, look, we had probably losses in the years prior to that, right? We got our clocks cleaned in 2008 in the global financial meltdown, and we had a huge loss that year, and then we had losses from maybe the year before that. And so we're simply getting back a refund on losses that we declared in those years. You know anything about that?
I'm sure you could say that, and I'm sure I could probably find a few homeowners that have had some serious losses over the last couple of years that would love to be able to make that same excuse when the IRS came knocking on their door. The fact is that that's not an excuse. And I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me for the years before it, but I think if anyone took an impartial look at the profits that GE has made in the last 30 years and the amount of taxes they've made, there would be no question that they have not been paying their fair share in corporate profits.
But they're not breaking the law. You and I may have a different opinion, but I'm assuming they can try out accountants that will say, listen, here's our tax return. It's 100,000 pages long, but you can look through it. It is absolutely 100% accurate, and I would bet dollars to donuts that's correct.
I
would bet before they ship that thing off to the IRS that it has been vetted, looked over top to bottom, and it doesn't get released until they absolutely agree that the thing is in compliance with whatever the regulations are.
And I would agree with them probably. I mean, I can't say for sure. I mean, I know that there may be something, but we're not accusing them of breaking the law. In fact, that is the point that we're trying to make, and that is the reason that people need to be standing up to these companies, because it is totally within the law, because of the amount of lobbying and the way they've done it, for them to receive that gigantic check from taxpayers.
So the point is, the laws need to change.
The laws have to change.
And the behavior is not going to change unless the laws change.
And the laws aren't going to change until we elect people and basically embrace the fact that elections should not be able to be bought by these companies, and fiscal policy should not be able to be made by these companies. Like you said earlier, the way it's ending up now because of this is a company and basically a tax structure or the code can decide how much they need to pay or how much they want to pay, and then they'll make that happen. And we're the ones that end up paying for it.
Now, unions are a member of your coalition. Yep. It's interesting because unions are usually interested in jobs and pay. I mean, those are the two major things that unions are interested in. And so this is kind of a departure for unions to become involved in corporate tax policy. Is that right or wrong?
I think I can't really speak for the history of unions.
Okay, well, you're here. To speak for your union partners, so you're going to have to do it.
Yeah, oh, no, I'm saying for the history of it. Right. But yeah, when you look at the problem and what we're fighting over, the fact is more and more working people are fighting over a smaller piece of the pie because of policies like this. And unions, if they're fighting about wages, health care, or worker rights, the fact is that pie that they're fighting for working people, is getting smaller and smaller and smaller because this is the tax structure of the country, that more money can be taken away from that. And
So I mean, that's what's interesting, is that unions are now getting involved in corporate tax policy, basically saying that literally the companies that they work for, they have to be responsible tax-paying entities. And that's kind of new for unions, and that it's a signal of how lopsided the disparity in wealth has become in this country, that unions are now involving themselves in this question. Is that right?
I think that's exactly right. It's because it has gotten so bad, and the power structure is so uneven that no one, and that's why we're seeing this coalition. I mean, all these different groups are trying to fight for the people in the neighborhoods and the working people, and it's just become such an unlevel playing field that the only way it's going to change is if people get together with their neighbors and say, look, enough is enough.
Now, I got an email from you guys the other day, and there were some protests that were held, and so tell me about how those went and what was the effect of those?
Yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned the SARA conference that's going on right now. And so what we did, and this was put on by the Good Jobs, but we had a lot of coalition partners that were there. We had two different actions. At first, in the morning, we had a welcome mat put out. Some of the 99% decided to lay down and throw out a red carpet for Jeffrey Immelt and some of these other 1%ers that would be joining us. We decided to welcome them to Houston, but we also said, now welcome to Houston, now pay your taxes. But then we had a rally of about 200 folks afterwards.
So was Immelt, was he aware of the protest?
I'm not sure if he was. Baker Hughes, CEO, actually mentioned the protest later in his response at the SARA conference. So they definitely made an impression because it is. I mean, and we understand that Houston, I mean, I'm born and raised in Houston. I've been a Texan my whole life. We understand that energy, there are Wall Street down here, and that people don't believe that energy, or people believe that Texas just let energy companies run ruckshaw over people and do whatever they want, pay whatever they want. And it really is. It's gotten to a point with the amount of profits, the billions and billions of dollars that they're taking out of the economy right now and not putting back into it, that people are standing up to that, even in Houston, Texas. And I'm proud to see it in my hometown, that people are standing up to these energy companies because they've been on the losing end of it for a long time.
Okay, if you're just joining us, this is the New Capital Show. Chris Young, who is with Good Jobs, Great Houston, a coalition of nonprofit groups and unions and some church groups that are focusing on corporate tax policy, corporate tax payments. And if you want to weigh in on the subject today, the telephone here is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Chris, the president recently gave a speech about reform of the corporate tax code. And the big picture in that speech was, we're actually going to lower the corporate tax rate. The statutory corporate tax rate is going to be lowered. And on the other hand, he proposed to eliminate lots of loopholes. I don't know exactly which loopholes he was talking about. I didn't read through the proposals that came out of that. But the idea was to, again, simplify the tax code. And we're hearing this about the personal tax code. Now we're hearing it from the president about corporate tax code. Where do you all stand on that effort by President Obama?
Yeah, I mean, eliminating these loopholes is the problem. I mean, if we talk about where the effective tax rate will be, that's a little beyond my pay grade. But what I can tell you right now is that over the last 3 years, the effective tax rate that GE paid was negative 45%, mm-hmm. a long way away from, I think, the 25% that the president was proposing. El Paso Energy paid a negative 1%. So we are far away from, but because of these loopholes, even getting anywhere near that discussion. The biggest companies in the world aren't paying any taxes, much less at lowering
their taxes. Well, some of them, right? I mean, yeah. To be fair, there are a lot of them that are paying large amounts of taxes,
yeah.
Right? I mean, it's not, I want to be careful here.
Yeah,
it's not an across the board thing. Yeah. I don't want to paint with too broad a brush here. I'm assuming that there are many companies that are paying taxes and that are paying substantial amounts of taxes. And unlike GE, probably don't have huge amounts of tax accountants hired to do all that they can. I'm sure they do what they can, and I'm sure that they've got lobbyists as well. But I'm assuming that there are gradations between. If we take the S&P 500, there are going to be some that are play pretty much straight ahead and pay their taxes, and others that don't. Is that right?
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, good actors that probably do pay their fair share.
Do we know any of those? I mean, who are? Like, for example, I know that Berkshire Hathaway,
yeah.
Run by Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett often in his letter to shareholders talks actively about the fact that this is how much tax we pay. We pay every penny of the tax that we owe. We're proud to pay it. We think we're getting a good deal paying these taxes. We live in a country where we're able to do business the way we want. That's the way Warren Buffett talks about it. I mean, would that be an example of somebody?
I think that's a perfect example, and that's one of the most prosperous companies in America. It shows you that you don't need to do what these companies are doing, and I think that's why we've focused on these companies, the ones that have decided to pay more in lobbyists than they have in federal income taxes, and that's basically because almost all of these 30, especially from this report, all received money back from the government and put hundreds of millions of dollars into lobbying. And Berkshire Hathaway lobbies, but how do they lobby? What do they lobby on?
I don't know that they do. I really don't. I don't know that Berkshire does. But it is conceivable that there could be a year where a company has a bad year. They get losses, and then they're owed a tax refund in the same way that can happen to an individual, right? That somebody has a bunch of losses in 2008. And in 2009, they pay a lot less taxes because they pick up some of the tax loss carry forwards, whether that's coming through from a business or from capital gains. Right. I mean, it's conceivable that could happen honestly as well.
Oh, definitely. I mean, and we want a fair tax policy. I mean, and the point is, and that's why, I mean, it's GE is not necessarily an anomaly. I mean, these are, when we're talking, like I listed them off, FedEx, Duke Energy.
Go ahead, read
yeah.
These, these are the worst of the worst on your list.
These are the dirty 30.
Read the dirty 30 slowly.
I mean, and this is Pepco Holdings is actually the worst in the percentage of their effective tax rate.
Pepco Holdings?
It's a D.C.-based company.
Don't know.
Who actually made about $880 million last year. They had an effective tax rate of negative 57%. So a little bit smaller company, but the next one on the list is one of the biggest companies in the world, GE, which, like we said earlier, $10 billion. But under them, PGE,
Pacific Gas and Electric,
yeah, CenterPoint, Radar Systems, which is all across. When you look at most of these companies,
I want to get the names out.
Boeing, Wells Fargo, Mattel, DTE Energy, Corning, FedEx, Wisconsin Energy, Duke Energy, DuPont, American Electric Power, Tenet Healthcare. These are, across the sector.
Well, I mean, this is a who's who of companies. There are a lot of utilities in there. I mean, you mentioned AEP and PG&E and CenterPoint. What's going on with the utilities?
Well, I mean, and that's a lot of these tax breaks that the loopholes that they've put in there and said that, and a lot of it basically comes out that they're the ones that spend a majority of this lobbying, and they have fought for tons of specific loopholes for their industry that will qualify them for huge tax breaks.
Mm-hmm. 713-526-5738. Let's go to the phones right now, and Scott is up first. Hey, Scott, welcome.
Hi. Well, I've heard a lot of people on KPFT decry the spending that corporations do on politics, but voters could make that spending money irrelevant if they really wanted to.
And how is that?
Make themselves better informed about who is running. don't just vote for people because they can spend money on TV ads. Be a little suspicious of people who are spending a lot of money, especially if they seem to be spending talking a blue streak about nothing, like posting lots of signs that say "Move Texas Ahead."
Scott, thanks for the call.
Okay.
Chris, any reaction to Scott's comments?
I think Scott's exactly right. I mean, we need more knowledge out there about these companies. I mean, about what's going on, about who these companies are supporting, what policies they're supporting, and not just these companies, but what policies politicians are supporting. Do they support tax breaks and loopholes for corporations, especially a lot of these energy companies, or do they support a fair tax code where everybody can basically prosper in an economy?
Okay, now we have the Citizens United decision that you alluded to briefly before, and that raises the prospect. We're seeing the actual manifestation of the results of that decision by the Supreme Court in the Republican primary going on right now. As we have basically not a war between candidates, not a campaign between candidates, but almost a campaign between super PACs and surrogates. And so how do we expect the rise of super PACs to play into, and how does the Citizens United decision play into this whole issue of tax policy? Can a super PAC lobby Congress on the tax code?
I think what a super PAC's role would in what it's seemed to come in. It's a beast that we've let out of the box. So I can't speak to everything that Citizens United will be, but it's basically to pick candidates. These super PACs pick candidates and back candidates on policies that they're going to put forward. Mm-hmm. And so it's their job to, and no uncertain words, really buy an election for a candidate that they know will do what they want them to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it looks like, right? Where the job is to buy the election through purchase of media airtime but really that's mostly through is what it's about is purchasing of airtime on television and radio,
and we're about to see it here in Texas now that we have we're out of Super Tuesday. We're going to have a later primary.
Texas primary?
It should be May 27th, I believe.
So the Super PAC spending should be coming to Texas any day now.
I don't know if KPFT will get any of that money.
Doyle, do we get any of that money? Doyle, how do we get Super PAC money?
We don't.
What? Come on.
Not unless there's some independent people.
How can we get Super PAC money? How can we get the big Super PAC money?
You know what? Our next pledge drive, we should just gear ourselves directly to individuals that are members of Super PACs. I don't know.
On the way over here, I was listening to, I don't know, I was just sort of sampling the AM dial, 650 and 740. And I mean, it is like lunacy. The stuff that comes out of those guys' mouth, it is just absolute lunacy. Now they're beating the drum to go drop nuclear weapons on Iran. I mean, they didn't get enough young Americans killed in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now they want to do it. These guys just never learn. Anyway, so the super PACs are coming to us any day now to begin to put a mitt over the hump or whatever it is. But what you're saying is that there is a direct line between the tax policy, the tax code, and the lobbying efforts, which could be either direct lobbying efforts with members of Congress, or as we now have with Citizens United, simple, what really is almost an some people would consider it to be an interference in elections, and others would say, well, it's just free expression of opinion.
Yeah. I mean, these companies, I mean, we listed off, like you said, they're the who's who of these companies. They didn't get where they are by being bad at business. They know when they put money in an investment, when they make a $3 billion donation to a super PAC or something similar to that, they know what they're getting out of it. And it's our job as constituents, as voters and people to look at it. Why would they be putting it in there? And it's not something, I mean, Citizens United has made us have to ask that of voters, but we're Americans, we'll stand up and do that.
Because companies can put, can companies put money into super PACs? And I mean, they have to be accountable to their shareholders, right? In terms of how the money's
being
spent.
Yeah, I mean, in specific election law like that, I'd have to get somebody to talk to you about that. I don't know, but I mean, it's from everything I've heard, I'm sure they have ways of doing it. And from what we've seen, I mean, I know one of the biggest contributors to super PACs, actually the second biggest, is actually a Houstonian or down here, Bob Berry from Bob Berry
Homes. Right. He was behind the Swift boat thing with John Kerry back in 2004.
Yeah, and now it's become a lot easier.
Okay. We've got another call holding. Plenty of lines open if you want to get in and discuss corporate tax policy and affiliated items with Chris Young of Good Jobs, Great Houston. 713-526-5738. Let's go to, is it Justo?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Justo. Welcome.
Hey. Okay, individuals have rights to free speech, and companies are a collection of individuals. Therefore, they should have rights to free speech and to donate to the candidates of their choice. Mm-hmm. I don't see what's wrong with Citizens United. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we have a right to petition our government, we have the right to pick which candidates we want and promote our candidates likewise. I don't see what the problem is with Citizens United.
Let me ask you this, Justo. The dissenting arguments in Citizens United, I'm going to probably do great injustice in representing their opinions, but as I understood it, basically the dissenting opinions in that decision basically said, We've got lots of practical issues with money being involved in American politics. That is evident that we have enormous problems with vast amounts of money pouring in to the political system.
Okay. I don't see what's wrong with that. If you have a right to petition your government, like, I don't see what would be wrong with that if the government has the power to regulate certain industries.
Right.
So if you're being regulated, I think you should be able to have a voice in how you are regulated.
But who's being,
to express your opinion in that way.
But who's being regulated?
The companies.
In what way are they being regulated?
In whatever legislation Congress passes, in the regulatory bodies passing legislation, like the how is irrelevant to me. It's just, to me, the issue is free speech. You should be able to petition your government and express which candidates you like in terms of in what regulations, in the same way that we express, you know, preference of candidates who want to regulate financial industries. You know, the media is a company too. So why should media companies get preference over other companies?
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
Let's say that you and I are both shareholders of a company. All right.
Uh-huh.
And the decision is made by the officers of the company that some amount of money is going to be put into some super PAC under the auspices of Citizens United.
Okay.
And I don't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I have a totally different political philosophy than that which is expressed in this particular donation. And yet I'm outvoted. Maybe you're in the majority of the shareholders, but I'm in the minority of the shareholders.
Uh-huh.
Isn't there an argument that says that, in fact, my wishes, my view as a shareholder is actually being, it's being undermined by the activity of the corporation?
Yes, but you voluntarily invest in that corporation. You don't have to put your money in that corporation.
But what if I didn't invest? What if I'm not an investor to go along with any sort of political contributions? I'm an investor because of, you know, the business.
Right. No, but I mean, if as an investor, you should know what kind of political leanings your company is getting into. If they're donating to something that you don't like, you obviously shouldn't invest in it.
Well, but what if I invested before and then they got into this activity and I'm a shareholder, I've got gains in the stock, I don't want to have to sell it and pay taxes? Why should I have to do that?
Why should I be forced to pay taxes? The solution would be to take your money out, not to, like...
Well, I just told you, what if I have a gain and I don't want to pay large amounts of taxes?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, what I'm pointing out to you is that, in a sense, there is a democratic oppression at work in the example I'm giving you.
Yes, but it's voluntary in this case. You agree to this rule, to this company's set of rules, and like, that's something that can be done internally with each company. You know, you can speak with your money in that case.
But what if I'm a minority shareholder and the majority wants to make this contribution politically, but I don't?
Well, I mean, you can't have it your way all the time.
But doesn't this go to the whole issue of why corporations should not be in the business of making political contributions, because there are inevitably, Justo, going to be large numbers of people who are not being represented and whose money as shareholders essentially are being used against their will. I mean, that
right,
seems to me
no,
to be...
But see, I disagree with that against their will part, because you don't have to give them your money.
Hey, Justo, let me ask you this. What if you had bought Coca-Cola stock in 1960 at $1, and you now own the stock at $70, okay? And Citizens United came out a few years ago, so for the majority of your stock holding, Citizens United has not been in place, and we haven't had to answer questions about political contributions. And suddenly Citizens United comes out. Now, you have a gain in the stock, by my calculation, of $69 a share. Do you agree with that? Yes, you do agree. I just want to know if you agree. Do you agree if you bought the stock at $1 and it's now at $70, you have a $69 gain in the stock?
Yes, sure.
And do you agree that you will pay a 15% tax if you sell the stock because of your principles? Yes or no?
I guess I just don't understand.
You don't understand capital gains tax?
No, not really.
Have you ever sold a stock?
No.
But you're telling me about
I'm a college student.
But you're giving me an opinion about corporate governance, and you've never bought or sold a stock.
Right.
I find that to be odd.
It's the principle of voluntarily giving your money to this company.
I didn't give the money to the company. I became an owner of the company back in 1960. I now have a very large gain because the company has done well. It sold a lot of soda. And now what you're telling me is that because for me to be a principled person, I've got to sell my Coke stock. I'm telling you I'm going to sell it at a $69 a share gain. And I'm going to pay a 15% tax on that, right, which equates to a $15 per share gain, right? I'm going to pay a big tax. You don't think that's tyranny, forcing me to pay a tax in order to uphold my principles?
I do think it's a tyranny, but...
Then you agree with me that Citizens United is a bad decision.
Huh?
Then you agree with me that Citizens United is a bad decision because it's enforcing a tyranny on minority shareholders. You don't agree.
No, I don't agree with that, because you could still donate toward a candidate who would be for repealing whatever tax you're...
Sure, I could as a person, but we're not talking about doing it. We agree as a person you should have the right to do it, but we disagree that as an entity that represents many people, that a corporation should have the right. Great to have you. Thanks for the call, Justo. Best of luck to you.
All right.
Chris, any reaction?
Yeah, well, I think he said it well at the start of it. If a corporation is a group of people, no one is taking the right to donate to a candidate or to have a freedom of speech away from any of those people. The fact is, do they get more rights because they form a corporation? And that's what it is. Not only do they have their individual rights now, but they have their corporate rights. And that's just not how the system's set up. It's an equal, fair playing field. Each individual, whether they're an owner of a stock in a corporation or not a stock owner of a corporation, should have the equal and same rights. Just because people are able to form a corporation doesn't mean they should have their individual rights and then their corporate rights on top of it. I mean, I always go back to the old adage, being from Texas, you know, I'll believe a corporation, and it's become an older adage now, but I'll believe a corporation's a person when Texas executes one.
Yeah, right. 713-526-5738. We've got about 20 minutes left. Plenty of room to get in on the lines today. 526-KPFT. Chris Young is my guest with Good Jobs, Great Houston, and we are talking about corporate tax rates and issues of what he believes is corporate tax avoidance, and that is in evidence from the not only very low amounts of taxes that certain corporations have paid, but in many cases very significant rebates that they've gotten despite the fact that they've had large magnitudes of profit in the last few years. And he points to the offshoring of profits and other tax loopholes that exist that allow this to happen. Let's go back to the phones. On line two is our good friend Johnny. Johnny, welcome.
Hey, Leo. When our young, smug, inside the Bill Maher bubble, John Paul Henry college student fails to recognize or refuses to admit, and like your guest, I think, pretty well described, is that the Citizens United creates a redundancy of rights. So, in other words, somebody who's an employee at Burger King or Sears or BP or Halliburton, the regular people who pull a weekly or biweekly check, those people don't get any more rights. Their bosses do. The people that pull tomatoes in Immokalee, Florida, they don't have any kind of voice in the legislature. The boss at the Burger King and his friends have it. So Citizens United totally throws everything way off balance. And that's why you have these corporate CEOs making 200, 300, even 1,000 times more a year than these bottom of the line employees of theirs.
So, Johnny, I mean, President Obama in the 2008 election was able to raise large, large sums of money, much of it raised from rank-and-file middle-class people giving small amounts of money. And there's an article, I believe, in today's New York Times about the operation that they've got up and running in Chicago to try to do the same thing, to try to, and they believe that they're going to be successful in raising at least $750 million for the campaign, possibly more. You know, would the wealthy people in the country come back and say, well, wait a minute, President Obama did just fine holding his own in the 2008 election, and it looks, by all accounts, that he's going to do just fine in 2012. What about that? I'm just asking because you got the answers.
you tell those people at PIMCO I'm up for adoption. Bye.
Bye, Johnny. Johnny's talking about my friends at PIMCO, the big money manager out in California. He calls them PIMCO. Okay, next is Rick on line three. Rick, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Thanks, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure to have you.
I just wanted to bring up that point of corporate personhood.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what we need to fix is corporate personhood. Just because they're a corporation doesn't give them rights as a person, although they have now received rights to be like a super person.
Yeah.
And I'll stop there and let y'all discuss it.
Thanks, Rick. You know, I don't know. I haven't done super in-depth reading on the history of corporate personhood. I do believe that a lot of this got going in the late 19th century when you had the Industrial Revolution in the United States in the years after the Civil War, and you had essentially a competition between the states to see who could give the most lenient and best corporate benefits in the process of being incorporated and ongoing state taxes and other taxes. And basically you had that break out. You had a competition to see who could be most generous to incorporating companies. And it turned out, actually, you know, Delaware became very famous for that. Delaware is a place where a lot of large corporations are incorporated. And Delaware sort of did better than everybody else at that. And they were all falling all over themselves at that time. The states were, because there was no such thing as a national corporate charter. You can't get a corporation chartered at the national level. Only at the state level, which is kind of a peculiar deal, right? I mean, so in the same way that we have different taxes from state to state, in the same way that we have different sales taxes, and some states have income taxes and don't have income taxes, and so on, we have different corporate regulations from state to state arising out of the late 19th century, and yet now we have with Citizens United essentially a federal ruling by the Supreme Court saying that they can spend anything that they want on politics and political donations.
I think it's important when we really think about, like, Citizens United and how it helps. I mean, it was almost an effect of what has been happening over years and years. When we look at this tax policy, the tax policy that I'm talking about, and mm-hmm. these refunds that most of these big mega corporations have been able to receive were set up well before Citizens United. Citizens United has almost been the thing that's going to push it over the cliff. And that's why we're focusing people, and we want people to understand what really is the problem. When we talk about our deficits, our national deficits, our problem, our budget deficit this year, this is where the problem is in the fact of this is the system. And as much as it was a Supreme Court decision, make no bones about it, Citizens United was a political decision. And it came from a lot of the political work that these companies have been doing over years and years and years. And so it might even do a good thing, the fact that it's waking up America to this structure, because let me tell you, the problems that we're dealing with weren't because of Citizens United. They're going to get a lot worse if we don't stand up to it. But these problems were set in force a long time before Citizens United. Citizens United came from that structure that they've been able to set up.
Now, Chris, I'm assuming, I don't know the figures here, but I'm assuming that the companies you named, that the executives were still paid their salary.
Quite a bit. I mean, I actually have some numbers. And El Paso Energy, which is one that responded.
Taxes were not paid over these years to the U.S. Treasury, but But salaries were paid to executives at the company. Go ahead and let us know.
Yeah, I mean, I think one good example about that is El Paso Energy, which is a Houston-based company, which is actually, there'll be an event tomorrow. We're meeting up at 9 a.m. down at City Hall for a march because El Paso's shareholders meeting is actually tomorrow. We look at a company like that. Over the last 3 years, they have not paid a penny in federal income tax, yet their top CEOs have received over, $41 million, or I'm sorry, let's see, where was the total for their CEOs? Yeah, top executives received $18 million just over the year. Just their top few executives have received $18 million, far more than they've, I mean, they've received
that, that's
money
in, that's in cash compensation. Does that not include stock options? And
I don't have the total. I don't have the key to say if that includes their stock options, no. But I'm pretty sure this is just cash. And, I mean, that's one company out of them. Jeffrey Immelt, I'm sure you can read the paper today and see how much he made on all of his money. But I don't have the specific stats on all of them. I know a couple of the companies, especially the Houston-based ones, millions and millions of dollars in CEO pay. And that was their excuse for saying, oh, well, it's a numbers game. You guys, we actually did deserve this because we lost money. Well, if we lost money, do you give your CEO a check for $18 million?
Right. So that begs the question as to if the performance was poor.
I want that job.
If the performance was poor and therefore tax losses exist, Why is compensation where it is? And as we know, the boards of corporate America have done a very poor job of standing up for shareholders. And all the mutual funds, by the way, I say this all the time. I mean, I see this. You know, all the mutual funds that rank and file Americans invest in your 401k and so forth, you know, those are run by Fidelity and Vanguard and so on. And those companies, in my judgment, do a very, very poor job of voting the shares, because it's not you that owns the stock directly, it's the mutual fund. So if you're an investor in Fidelity Magellan, what you have to understand is that Fidelity, the fund, the operator of the fund, basically has control of those votes. And so it's up to the Fidelities and the Vanguards and the so forth of the world to vote for the boards of directors and to vote for corporate resolutions that are going to protect all the shareholders and your interests. And I think this is one of the untold stories that really has not been told over the last few years. We've heard about the banks, and we've heard about the investment banks, and we've heard about subprime. But what no one has really talked about, and I am waiting for some financial writer somewhere to pick this story up and talk about really the lack of active voting that goes on by the large mutual fund complexes. Because as long as those guys get their 70 basis point fee, right, or their 1% on your mutual fund in your 401k, they're happy. They really don't care how you vote, how they vote or anything, right? They got the money, and they're charging you fees, and they're making dough. And to me, it's a big scandal, because these are the shareholders in this company. In this country, sorry. they are the shareholders now. The Fidelities and the Vanguards, they have an obligation, and I don't think that they are discharging it. A couple more calls here. Let's go to Martin on line one. Martin, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call.
You bet.
Really enjoying the program. There's one thing that I don't think has been pointed out. Because you're a corporation, who says that all your shareholders are U.S. citizens? And I'll hang up and see what the ramifications of that are, as you would think.
Absolutely right, Martin. no question about it. Which is a great, great question. I mean, ownership can transcend international boundaries, right? Think of all the things that capital can flow across international boundaries, and products can flow across international boundaries. Ownership can flow across international boundaries, you know, but people can't, right?
Yeah.
humans can't, and environmental regulations can't, and labor laws can't. None of that can go international, right? But ownership of capital and ownership of businesses can. So I think it's a great question. It's a great point that you bring up. It's yet another inconsistency in our system that you know, really, I think it's fine. I think ownership of corporations should be able to transcend international boundaries. My clients own shares in international companies, and they own the bonds of international companies in other countries. But it's not right that also environmental regulations shouldn't go that way also. So to me, Martin, what you're pointing up isn't that we should shut down international ownership, but that we need to expand the good things in this world that are not currently being shared with other parts of the world, environmental regulations, labor laws, and so forth. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, and I think when it goes to the electoral policies, I mean, the same thing. I mean, I'm thinking back to the 90s when Bill Clinton had accepted money from the Chinese, and there was a huge stink about it. Well, if you want to look at these super PACs, I would love for someone to look at and see how much money came from companies that have ownership or shareholders and a large portion of them overseas. I mean, this is Citizens United, and what's happened this year has probably been the biggest boom for foreign money coming into our electoral process. And I can't imagine an American in the country that welcomes that.
By the way, this is hot off the press here. The House backs aid to small businesses. The House on Thursday overwhelmingly approved legislation to ease small businesses' access to investments in capital markets, a sign that the shadow of the November election is pressing Congress into action. The 390-23 vote, wow, that's pretty bipartisan, on the Jumpstart Our Business Startups Act is likely to propel the legislation forward. Harry Reid, Senator of Nevada, said that a Senate version was likely to be unveiled early next week, and aides said it would likely reflect the House bill. What is in this thing? Jobs legislation is narrowly tailored. The centerpiece, drafted by two freshman representatives, delays some Securities and Exchange Commission regulations and creates a category of emerging growth companies to lower the cost of initial public offerings for smaller firms. Another measure removes an SEC prohibition on small companies using advertisements to solicit investors. Wow. Okay, so they're gonna defang the SEC a little bit more. That sounds like a interesting way to go. Okay, let's go. We've got another call here in just a few minutes left. Austin on line two. Welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I just wanted to point out two things. I'd love if you guys can elaborate, and I'd love to hear the conversation off the air. But in layman's terms, I'm just thinking here, we were talking about, you know, certain companies getting tax breaks because they were losing money. Well, I don't see why we can't make the argument that that is some type of corporate welfare. And I'd love to see some numbers pulled out of, you know, how much the federal government loses in revenue from those tax breaks compared to other social welfare systems. And I'd love to see us counter the points of, you know, some of the conservatives on that.
Hang on, Austin.
Sure.
Are you asking specifically about losses, about operating losses in companies?
No, well, what I'm speaking about is from what you guys were saying, and this is layman's terms, so please correct me if I'm wrong here, but, you know, these certain companies like Pepco got a lot of tax breaks based on loss in revenue on their own side.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to see how much money the federal government loses in tax revenue for giving those tax breaks. Now, I don't see how we couldn't argue that that is a type of corporate welfare for all the conservatives out there that really dislike welfare in general.
Well, I think that's exactly what Chris is here to say today. I think that's exactly what he's saying, is that we have a form of welfare. I mean, welfare comes from what? It comes from the English phrase "fare thee well," and it's when we give welfare to somebody, we are wishing them well rather than wishing them ill, and that's fine. But the problem is that in this country, right, the word welfare was turned into a bad word when it applied to poor people. And
so now
no one wants to wish anyone well in the United States of America as a result.
Absolutely.
Okay, Austin.
If you don't mind, real quick, one other thing I'd like to point out. You guys were talking a lot about the origins of Citizen United back in, you know, the late 19th century.
Yes.
I think a good person to take a look at would be Ayn Rand and that whole philosophy. I think that ideology right there is what built up to this point.
Thanks.
But anyway,
thank you very much.
I'll hang up.
Okay,
now.
Thanks. Chris, anything you want to add to?
Yeah, I mean, as far as what that number will be, and I think this goes to why the president was talking about eliminating a lot of these loopholes. And I mean, it's not about gouging companies. It's about making sure there's a tax base to run the country and to provide the programs that our country needs to be great. And I mean, but that, for putting a number on if every corporation across the country paid its fair share of taxes, wow, we probably wouldn't have a budget deficit.
Well, I don't know about that. But,
over this.
We'll see. It would be closer. Now, the president's calculations on his proposal, again, this was a few weeks ago, the president said if his proposal was adopted, that It would cut the statutory tax rate. It would also cut the loopholes, but that their calculations were that, in fact, the revenues that would be raised by the government would be higher, would result in greater revenue collection by the government. Is that your understanding of that, and would you support that?
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, I'm not an economist by any means, but yeah, I mean, I think the fact is when we're looking at these numbers, and some of the reasons that people are getting so upset is the fact that these companies are just receiving checks back from the government. They're paying negative taxes,
yeah.
And they're paying nothing even close to that. So anything's better than where it is now.
And the one thing we haven't emphasized is that in fact this is all not just a sop. If it's the case, it's not just a sop to executives, but to shareholders as well. And the shareholding class in this country tends to be a wealthier class than other middle classes. So that's really the practical effect. It may well contribute as well to the growing disparity in wealth between upper classes and lower classes in this country, because it's the upper classes that are the shareholding classes. And so we didn't make that explicit in today's discussion, but it's there. We're out of time. We got to run. Chris Young, thank you so much. Tell people again real quick how they can get a hold of you if they want to join your...
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for anybody that thinks this is an issue, especially El Paso, which is a local company, be down at City Hall at 9 a.m. tomorrow. It's El Paso's shareholder meeting. We'll be marching over there with a group of people from all over the city. But if you want some more information, please give us a call at 71...
And be polite. Be polite, right? be firm but polite.
Yeah, no, this is... I mean, it's people coming together and having their voice heard, and everybody should want that. But give us a call at 713-236-8245.
That does it for another edition of the New Capital Show. Thanks to Doyle, newcapitalshow.com, on Facebook, leogold.newcapitalshow. Back next week. Take care. Stay tuned, please, for the local news.
KPFT's 42nd birthday, and we're throwing a party on Sunday, March 11th. Come on down. The lineup this year includes Hayes Carl, Ray Wiley Hubbard, Marley's Ghost, Lisa Morales, Patrice Pike, Sarah Hickman, and the Sideshow Tramps. There'll be a raffle and silent auction and even more surprise in the works. Visit kpft.org for more details. Advance tickets are $25 and funds benefit KPFT. It all happens under the big top at McGonigal's Mucky Duck, noon till 7 p.m. at 2425 Norfolk in Houston. Don't forget, Sunday, March 11th from 12 till 7 at 2425 Norfolk in Houston. This is Pacific Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, facebook.com/kpfthouston.
Don't think you can make a difference? Be part of a movement that can revolutionize the radio station you know and love. By joining KPFT's Sustainer program, you can support your station and help KPFT reduce its pledge drives. What's a Sustainer? Rather than giving a yearly gift, Sustainers give a monthly donation that continues as long as you want. Giving $20, $100, or $500 monthly helps change the way KPFT operates. From having to meet our operating expenses through days and days of on-air fundraising, to friends of the station boosting it.